WBRKD. Break down FM. Where we break down news, views, and the hip hop movement.
You this afternoon. We are down here at the South Central Farm here in Los Angeles, and we're running into some hometown folks from the Bay Area. They are from Watsonville, the Brown Berets, out of Watsonville. And say your name for everybody.
My name is Talejo, out of the Watsonville Brown Berets.
And you are?
I'm Jen Laskin.
Now let me ask you, for people who aren't familiar, who are the Brown Berets? Let's give a little bit of history and then talk about how you guys formed in Watsonville.
Well, the Brown Berets was a movement that started during the civil rights era of the 1960s, and it was a group of young people that came together to fight against the negative aspects that were affecting them in their community, the conditions of their schools, police harassment, poverty, unemployment, and all these ills just like today. But these young people decided to do something about it because nobody was gonna come and change those conditions. They had to do it for themselves. And they were inspiring by movements that were going on all over the world, in the Cuban Revolution, in the South American Revolution, the revolutions in Africa, the Black Panther Party, the American Indian Movement, the Puerto Rican Young Lords, and they decided to make these changes for themselves.
So the Brown Berets came out of the Bay Area, or did it start in Los Angeles? I mean, where did it first spark off?
Actually, it started in the barrios of East Los Angeles, and then spread like wildfire throughout what we call Aztlán.
Now, how do you guys come together in Watsonville? I mean, it seems like there's a resurgence of organizations that really want to rebuild off the work of the past. You know, you have the New Black Panther Party. You have people that are really looking into the history of organizations from the past and then trying to build on that.
Well, our organization started in 1994, and we were a group of young people studying about our history and our culture, and we were very inspired by what the Brown Berets were doing back in those days. And we thought about the issues that they were fighting against, and we said to ourselves, those issues are still happening today. We still have poverty in our community. We're still having police harassment. We're still having, our conditions of our schools are worse than they were in the 1960s. So what those people started in those days, we still have to relight the fire and get it started today. And that's why we started. In 1994, there was the deaths of a young girl, Jessica Cortez. She was 9 years old, and her brother was 16, George Cortez. They were killed in a gang retaliation, you know, point blank rage with a 9mm, and we decided we need to make something that captures the attention of the young people and divert that negative energy that's happening in our community and our barrios, and teach them, teach ourselves what's going on and how to make productive changes, repoint that energy in the right directions to uplift and to build our communities.
If you're just tuning in, we're here at the South Central Farm in Los Angeles, and we're talking with Tomas and Jen, who are the members of the Brown Berets down in Watsonville. And I wanted to bring you in on this, Jen, because in the past, when people have restudied that history, one of the things that they found was the glaring inequality between men and women. And it seems like people have been trying to readjust to make those corrections as they rebuild things in the present. How are you seeing things in the women in the Brown Berets today?
Well, we deal with sexism and the Brown Berets as it comes. We deal with it right away with our men, with our women. You know, our women work really hard to speak up when we need to. We don't really allow ourselves to be silenced, quieted, to be put into roles. And I don't really think the men in the Brown Berets are consciously doing the things that the men in the 60s and the movements did. But I think that there's a subliminal sort of patriarchy that is inherent in our culture, and especially in the Latino culture, that we just deal with as it happens, and we talk about it, and we make sure that every single leadership role in an organization has a man and a woman, a male and a female. So our treasurer, male and female, co-chairs, male and female, sergeant at arms, male and female, secretary, male and female. Every single position we have has somebody of both genders, and then those roles are shared equally. We MC events, male and female. We also read a lot. We listen to Kathleen Cleaver. We read Asata Shakur, and she's done a fantastic interview that says the revolution ain't happening without women. And we just listen to our sisters and learn from them, and that is incredibly empowering, so that we don't make the same mistakes and we can just move forward.
You know, one of the biggest challenges facing the Latino community, at least amongst young people, is the high incarceration rate, the attraction towards gang life. And in particular, I'll start off with you, Jen. You have a lot of women that have, you know, flocked to that. How do you deal with that, you know, bringing the type of discipline with the Berets have been known for? Is it something that's welcome with open arms, or what's the methodology that you do to use to get people to see it a different way?
We don't believe that gangs are inherently a bad thing. What we believe is that the violent activities and behaviors associated with gangs are a bad thing. So we embrace the community. We embrace the dignity and the community and the respect that goes along with being a member of any group or clica or gang, if you will. But it's what you need to do to be a part of that we're not down for. As far as young girls with high rates of incarceration, the Brown Berets are now a partner in a program in Watsonville called Girl Space, which is a weekly program that meets just for girls. There's no really set curriculum, but the girls come, they hang out, we got a killer spot for them, provide food, and just through conversation, through some kind of positive or educational activity, the girls empower themselves to have that voice, to speak up, to do what they believe, and that we find is really successful with these girls.
Let me ask the same question to you. If there's anything you would add to the gang thing, because right now, especially when we're down here in Los Angeles, you know, MS-13, you know, MA or Mexican Mafia, these are huge presences here. How do you deal with that, and do they welcome your presence when you run across those type of now well-established entities?
First thing, my comrade Jen was saying that it's nothing wrong about representing your hood, representing your colors, right? As long as if you're going to represent it in a good way, represent your family, uplift your neighbors. It's when you start getting involved in the negative activities that destroys communities, that are killing our young people. That's when it becomes a negative thing. And that's what we're trying to change in the gangs and the neighborhoods, is redirect that energy into positive aspects. And that's one of our missions in our organizations, is to teach them the tools to do that. As far as our work, a lot of young people have been exposed a little bit about what the Brown Berets are about. You know, we've worked in the hoods, they know what we're trying to do, and so they give us the respect. We've never been disrespected for our type of work. They say, hey, man, we know what you guys are doing, we love what you guys are doing, but I'm not just ready for that. But our mission is to keep and keep agitating, keep stimulating these young people and teaching them their history and their culture and what the true nature of the enemy consists of.
Are you guys in touch with the original members of the Brown Berets? And if so, what sort of advice do they pass along to you?
Well, yeah, we work with original members of the Brown Berets. We have a good communications with people like Carlos Montes and a few others. And we were very inspired by what they did in the 1960s, and we carry on that legacy. But we also try to correct a lot of the mistakes that were done in time in order to be successful in the future and fight a cause that for all people, not just Chicanos. We try to make it a movement in our organization that includes all strokes.
That's the voice of Tomas. You also heard the voice of Jen, members of the Brown Berets out of Watsonville. We're going to take a break and come back and conclude our conversation with them.
Breakdown FM. Fresh for the new millennium.
You suckers. 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 Suckers.
Before I got here, I was gaffled in the calle.
talking with members of the Brown Berets out of Watsonville. Before we continue on, you guys have a big event that's taking place on Monday, April 17th. You want to talk a little bit about it so we can get the information out?
This is our sixth annual Youth and Power event. It's taking place at the Vets Hall in Watsonville. It's 215 each East Beach Street from 6 to 11 p.m. Featuring Immortal Technique, Suito Tonali, Para La Gente, The Warlords, and many other speakers. And
I think you'll have Adisa Benjoko, right?
From Absolutely, who wrote a book called Shining Sword.
No, Lyrical Swords, yeah.
Lyrical Swords. And he's coming out, and we're going to have members of the, you know, old Black Panther Party out to the table and all kinds of heads. This is an event that we put on every year for the youth of Watsonville and the surrounding areas. It's a $5 donation, and we just seek to educate, empower, and activate our youth.
Now, what's the number or website if people want more information?
www.brownberets.info. www.brownberets.info. You can also hit us up on MySpace, Brown Berets MySpace.
It looks like everybody's on MySpace. Hey, I'm not going to knock it, man. It's opened up a lot of doors for me. I got like 12,000 friends. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, let's look at some recent history. You guys started in 94, and if my memory serves me correctly, it was around that time that we had Proposition 187. Later we had 209. Now we have the situation with the Minutemen. And one of the things that I've noticed, you know, my tenure being on radio, is that I've seen like some real highly politicized moments within a lot of Latino communities, especially in the Bay Area. I remember around 87 when they had the walkouts and everything, and then later on you seem to have a resurgence. And now with the whole situation of the immigration, a couple of questions. Is it a continuum? Has the momentum been that what started off with Prop 187 has been building and building, or has those moments been stifled and undermined, and then you're finding yourself having to regain that momentum again with each new generation of people?
Well, I think there's always been activism in the community, people organizing consistently, correct? The movement has never died. There's organizations, rural communities like Watsonville, the Bay Area, cities, Los Angeles, San Diego, there's all over the country, you know, and different nationalities, people resisting and organizing. And so what happened with H.R. 4437 was just an uprising against a situation, that people were being stigmatized in the media, in corporate media, especially CNN, Fox News. You had Lou Dobbs constantly making immigrant people seem like villains, seem like these hordes of masses that were going to just destroy everything. And so what it was finally the people saying, you know what, we had enough. We're going to go out there to the streets and we're going to protest. That's what happened in Proposition 187. That's what happened right now with H.R. 4437.
Now, how do we get that momentum to stay? Because that's what I'm saying. I remember the walkouts with 187. And then it's like, you're saying, wow, this is going to be a big monumental thing, and stuff is going to be institutionalized, and you're going to have a real powerful entity. And then all of a sudden, I wouldn't say it died out, but it just, something happened. And now it seems like I'm seeing this repeat itself.
I think what we have to do is create a, what happened is that every community was organizing their own thing, right? And so what I see different now between 187 and H.R. 4437 is that communities are working in solidarity with each other, networking, utilizing the tools of the internet, and check out MySpace. You know, one of the things that were said about the students that walked out in the last couple of days were that they used MySpace in order to organize those walkouts. There's a lot of information we gotta use, like Immortal Techniques. Use those systems of oppression, turn it on its head, and use it for the right cause.
Anything that you would add to that, you know, and if you have that same sort of perspective that I put out?
Well, I think the most inspiring part of the past couple of weeks has been the youth, the high school students, the middle school students that were walking out of school for their families, for their rights, for their dignity, and they did it in such an empowering way. It was an honor to be able to work with them. And I say anybody who works with youth, help them hook up with other youth. Keep teaching them the history of their own oppression. Keep teaching them the realities of what they face now and how to use the tools of their oppressors. How to work on city council campaigns. What is a school board campaign? What kinds of decisions do these people make? And for any teachers, I'm a teacher, and anybody who's listening out there that works with youth, email us, hit us up at www.brownberets.info, because we're looking at hooking up our 1,000 radical youth that walked out of school last week with other youth all across the state. And it's happening down here. We've been talking with teachers, bringing these kids together and letting them just continue organizing themselves and not letting it be a lost moment.
You know, just the last couple of questions. You guys are in Watsonville, and one of the things that when we look at movements, we often look at them in big cities, New York, Oakland, San Francisco, Los Angeles. But is there a different approach and a different understanding that we need to have when we look at it in a place like Watsonville, which we would consider a rural community, and something that oftentimes when we do our organizing, we overlook, but that seems to be a heartland, especially for the Latino community?
I think the gig in rural communities is that the power structures are often very small circles. So to beat those power structures in city council elections, in school board elections, the developers, the ag, you know, people, the farmers, in order to get those people, you're actually dealing with big fish in a very small pond. So the power of the people and using that system to upset them or fight them is quite effective. And getting, you know, everybody on the same page in a small town is probably a little bit easier than in a big city.
And also people haven't been corrupted as easily.
Yeah, and I think it's just really important to educate people as to the history of where they're at, even if they haven't been there for too long. But making sure that they understand, you know, Watsonville has a history of direct action, of protest. The cannery strikes in 69, the Brown Berets, you know, occupied city hall for, housing, you know, low-income housing. The UFW has a deep roots in Watsonville. So people need to understand that history and keep it going, you know. And when we marched, we were 3,000 deep on March 25th in Watsonville. Brown Berets actually got charged for that march because we didn't have a permit. We didn't know so many people were going to show up. But, like, I'll tell you what, the powers that be, that old police chief and the old city council members, they were scared. They were really scared, and that's why they charged us, and that's why they singled out one of our members and, you know, made us pay a fine and on. I mean, it's all cool now. But, you know, they saw what was happening again and stronger and better.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying, we need to be up on this rural game that you're bringing. Because oftentimes being in a city, we separate ourselves. We think, oh, y'all in Watsonville, that's the country. But as you said, that has a rich history, which has long-lasting and long-reaching ramifications. Anything that you would add to that?
I like to just make a comparisons with movements that happen in rural communities like Watsonville with the movements that happen in rural communities during the 1960s, you know, about segregation and the sit-ins happen in rural communities in the Deep South, in Anniston, Alabama, in Birmingham, Alabama. Those are small cities, rural communities that depended a lot on agriculture. So, you know, what's happening in those times is happening today. So, you know, there could be a lot of momentum, a lot of spirit, a lot of stuff happening in these rural communities that we have to start learning about and how we could plug into that type of action.
And it shouldn't go over people's heads that today we have, it looks like, at least a few hundred, maybe close to 1,000 or more people that have come out here at the South Central Forum in Los Angeles. So again, that whole thing, that whole thing about the rural community and the spirit around that is something that we need to watch, because you can obviously catch the energy and see where people are coming from. You know, one thing I did want to ask is just with the modern day Brown Berets, when we think of the Black Panthers and we think of the Berets, and I'm not fully aware of the history of the Berets, we're thinking people carrying the shotguns, you think of the Huey Newtons, people patrolling the police and dealing with the police brutality, and also people making a firm commitment to defend the community. Is there a different change in that? Is there a different approach towards that? I don't see any of the brothers with rifles or anything like that. So how do the Brown Berets approach defending the community this time around?
Well, I think we were carrying a more powerful weapon than an M16, than an AK-47, or a shotgun like Huey Newton we used to carry around back in the days and the rest of the comrades of the Black Panther Party. Today we carry a weapon, which is our minds and our voices and our solidarity between ourselves. That's what makes us a powerful unit right now. And that actually shakes up this system more than it does when you carry a shotgun.
And we shouldn't get it twisted that you will hold it down anyway.
Definitely, but we always reserve, it's in our code of conduct. We reserve the right to defend ourselves by any means necessary.
So, last question. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he ran for election, made a killing, literally, in the farmland, so to speak. He got a lot of support. I'm not sure in Watsonville, but definitely up in the Central Valley. And the whole fight with the immigration thing and him not following through and, you know, at one point feeling like he had the Latino vote in his pocket. How does this play out, and how does this connect with some of the work that you guys are doing now? Has there been a shift in attitudes, and are you able to take advantage of that shift?
Well, I look at electoral politics as one small tool in our toolbox. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I hope he's dead in the water, but quite honestly, I'm often shocked by the way people in this country vote, and I don't know if it's who's voting or how they're counting the votes, but I think Arnold is dead. I think in the beginning he had a lot of momentum because he was talking his I'm an immigrant, and all the people knew him and trusted him because he was a familiar face and he's an immigrant and this and that, and I think he's so off the radar screen that I don't know how that's going to go or what's happening.
Okay. And last thing, Immortal Technique talked about hookup with you guys. What does that mean? That seems like a very, very scary to some people, very inspiring to a lot of others, but a very impactful and dangerous situation in terms of how the government would see it. Immortal Technique coming out of Harlem. You see his fan base. He doesn't have fans. He has supporters. And then coming out and really linking up. What does that mean now?
Well, I think...
How did this come about?
Well, first of all, it was years in the making. You know, we met Immortal Technique through one of our brothers named Mario Hardy. Other people know him as Mario Africa from the Move organization. Mm. And so that he introduced us to Immortal Technique when he came out and did a show. Mario Africa was one of our guest speakers in our last Youth in Power. So definitely we've been communicating, creating that relationship, telling about the things we've been doing out here in rural areas like Watsonville. And he's been very inspired by our work. And, now he's going to come out here and work together. You know, us support his cause, you know, getting the message out to the young people, and us, he's supporting our movement as well. That April 17th is going to be the catalyst of that relationship, and hopefully it flourishes. It captures the minds of young people that listen to his lyrics that are seeing our type of work in the neighborhood, and we're expecting great things to come out of this.
You know,
I just want to say that Immortal Technique isn't just going to be performing a short set at Youth in Power. He's doing a youth workshop from 3 to 5 in the afternoon just for the kids, just to sit there, break it down. It's called Street Politics of the Rap Industry. It's at the same venue. So Immortal Technique is so down and down for the youth, and he's just giving it back to what he says, he's trying to continue what he started in the minds of the youth.
And you know, also a little bit related to that, Fred Hampton Jr., who was here, Chairman Fred Hampton, who was here last night, one of the things about the legacy of his father was that he had united a lot of the Chicago gangs with the Black Panthers, and that became something that really intensified the COINTELPRO program that was used to eventually kill him. And then of course here in Los Angeles where we're at, same thing with Bunchy Carter when he hooked up with the gangs that were here. With the work that you guys are doing in Watsonville, how do you protect yourself against, obviously, hooking up with Immortal Technique, that becomes grounds to start bringing some insurgency things in there. You start working with the gangs, you know, it's obvious that there are police here, you know, filming and taking notes and what have you. How do you all prepare for that mentally and physically and spiritually?
I think it's something that, you know, we're aware of and we constantly, have discussions about. What we actually do is always secure ourselves, you know, so we know who comes within our organization, know our members well. Not pass unnecessary information off the internet, because you know everything we're doing, the phones, everything is tapped. So any information that, you know, we always secure, always watch our bases at all times, you know. But at the same time, the work that we're doing is not illegal. All we're doing is uplifting our community, helping out our communities. So if that gives us grounds to put us in prisons, if that gives us grounds to lock us up, then so be it. We're going to make the sacrifice and do that.
But also the communication thing?
And our support base is huge and diverse. We have little old ladies who protested the Vietnam War that come to our events and write us checks every month. We have farm workers from the UFW come to our meetings and support us and support our marches and rallies. So our support base is nationwide and extremely diverse and outspoken.
Well, there you go. I want to thank you. That was the voice of Jen, also Tomas, from the Watsonville Brown Berets. We'll look out for you guys on Monday, April 16th, I believe, and 17th. Thank you very much. In Watsonville. And once again, give out the number and website.
Cool. That's www.brownberets.info. www.brownberets.info. You can also email us at brownberets@msn.com.
Well, there you go. We're out for now. Peace, everybody.
Well, I'm Grandmaster Cash, and I'm Cool Hurts, living now. fast again. Hip hop was not alternative. It was not alternative energy when the doors of disco were slammed in our face. They told us go in the park and go do that hippity hop stuff out there in the park. Well, I'm Grandmaster Caz. All right.
Good.